And Wade Grushner back with you on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. We're joined now by Al Fitzmaurice, played for the Royals 1969 and 1978. He's here with us to talk some Royals baseball and talk about the glory days of the Royals as well back in the 70s. Al, how are you doing today? Thanks for your time.
I'm doing good, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate the time. And I guess, first of all, let's just go back a little bit. You were with the Royals when the Royals began, right?
Yes, I was... I had a call up in 1969, the first year the Royals were in existence, and experiencing all the growing pains of a brand new organization, which, as you can imagine, are difficult at times. But you know, for a young baseball player, it's pretty exciting. And then, coming full circle and becoming a winning organization. Actually, my last year with the Royals was '76.
Okay.
The year we won the division and went into the playoffs and lost to the Yankees in five games on a Chris Chambliss home run. But it was a great run. It was an 8-year run, and made a lot of friends and still have a lot of friends here locally that played on those ball clubs.
One of the stats that stood out to me, and this just goes to show you how baseball has changed over the years, is that you made 159 starts as a Major League Baseball pitcher, mm-hmm. and you completed 23% of those starts. 36 of those 159, you went the entire way. And nowadays, we rarely see a pitcher go 9 innings. Is that disappointing to you when you see that over time? Or is you just say, you know what? It's the generation we live in. Baseball has changed. Or do you wish you could see those guys that could go the distance more often?
Well, I'd like to. The one thing I don't like is the quality start that they've kind of penned in, and I'm pretty sure it was an agent that came up with that as a way of getting their clients more money. And they talk about, I think if you go 6 innings and give up 3 runs, but basically that's like almost a 5-point ERA, which isn't really that great. But, and I've talked to some of the people I played with, even some of the guys that's currently, and, quality start is when you win a ball game. If you win a ball game and you give up 8 runs, but your team scores 12, that's a quality start. If you lose a ball game 2-1, you lost the ball game. That's how it is. It's a loss. Yeah, you threw the ball pretty well, but there shouldn't be any positive stat for you in regards to that when you could have talked and negotiate. In my era, I'm sure the pitchers before us looked at it kind of the same way though, because they used to go out and just pitch 250, 300 innings every year. We threw 240, 230 for the most part, mm-hmm. Maybe 250, 260. But, all of a sudden there were roles for, people in the bullpen, the hold guys, the bridge guys, and, the closers. And, personally, when I had a game on the line in the eighth or ninth inning, I wanted to be the one that controlled the outcome of that.
Sure.
If I'd gotten that far and was doing that well, let me finish it up. Pitchers make adjustments throughout the entire game, and to me, five and fly, just basically that's what you are. You're a starter. You're not necessarily a finisher.
So what do you think about the pitch counts? Because you just mentioned you threw 230, 240 innings. Guys before you threw 250, 300 innings. Now it's if somebody is approaching 100 pitches, he might get the 110. That's about it, and that limits their innings, and then it's bullpen specialization.
Well, I'm not necessarily a big fan. I mean, I think there's a certain part in the game where, again, if you get into the seventh or eighth, the hitters will basically tell you when you're done. And, not necessarily because you're at 90 pitches, 100 pitches, 110 pitches. I had an 11, I had a 12th inning complete game where I'm sure I threw 160 pitches, 170 pitches. I'm not saying that's a great thing for your arm. And, of course, there's so much money invested in these people now that you can see where they, will try and protect their investment. But I think they kind of... don't ask enough out of their pitchers. They're not asked to throw a lot of innings in the minor leagues, and so they're not going to be expected to throw a lot in the major leagues. And I don't think it's the players themselves. I think it's just kind of where ownership, the front office, management has gotten together and say, hey, let's protect these guys a little bit. you know, I don't have any stats in front of me. I don't know that there were more or less injuries, you know, in days gone by or there are today. So I don't know what substantiates that. But I think they're just more careful because of the fact that there's so much more money invested. And the pitching staffs are 2 to 3 pitchers larger than they used to be. We generally went with a 10-man staff, sometimes a 9-man staff, and now there's 12 to 13 pitchers on the roster. So, you know, they've made allowances for pitchers going 5 and 6 innings. Then you've got your, you know, 6th or 7th inning guy, 8th inning guy, 9th inning guy. And if you pretty much play it by the book, there's not a lot of questions you have to answer after the game.
Al Fitzmaurice is our guest here today on the Sports Ticket. Pitched for the Royals 1969-1976 and the majors from 1969 to 1978. So I want to go back to that era a little bit because, first of all, what was it like to be a part of a team that was just getting started? The Royals, oddly enough, won their first ever game in extra innings as an expansion team. And, of course, we know about the success in the 70s and then in the 80s and then the misery for quite some time until recently, last couple of years. But what was it like to be a part of a team that's just getting started that doesn't have any history?
Well, again, it was, you know, there were difficult times, but for the most part it was a great time because a lot of people came together without much or any experience whatsoever in the big leagues. And, you know, every club I was ever with, when you went to spring training, you anticipate winning it all. And we were like that even in 1969 because we didn't know any better. But, you know, you suffer growing pains. And, you know, again, there were no real established players early on. You know, we got Otis, I think, in 70. And, you know, we kind of knew what we had, but, he didn't really have the experience. John Mayberry came along, you know, Hal McCray and some of these players that had played a little bit in the big leagues but really weren't experienced. Mo Drabowski was probably the most experienced we had, and he was our closer, basically. So, you know, it's hard to play off of a guy that doesn't pitch or play in every game. So we, you know, hit some speed bumps, came through it in fine fashion, but the thing is that, you know, one of the things they talk about the Royals today is how family-like they were, and we were very similar as far as, you know, regards for our teammates, and I think we played a selfish brand baseball back in, you know, when I was playing, and as they do today, and so I see similarities other than the fact that these guys win a lot more than we did back then. And in a relatively short period of time that we started putting together some winning seasons and made some serious runs at it. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to Cedric Tallis back in the day who put those teams together.
I know that you still go to a lot of Royals games, saw you at one recently, and that's how we got connected to have you on the show today. And I'm interested in this because I remember Kauffman Stadium, where it was, at the time it was called Royal Stadium, and then all of the renovations and the concourse widening and all the kid stuff in the outfield. And the Royals, we understood at the time, the product on the field wasn't that good. So if you get people to come out, bring their kids, bring their families, you might not be sitting down watching the game the entire way, but you're still spending your money. You're coming out and having a good time with the family. And where I'm going with this is that you were part of the Royals organization when this stadium, Royal Stadium, opened back in 1973. How do you put that in perspective over the course of time to see where the stadium was when it first opened? And I'm sure there was a lot of excitement at the time, and then to where it is today.
Well, the stadium was, you know, at the time was state of the art. The fountains, of course, you know, Kansas City is a city of fountains, and they wanted to continue that you know, trend or what have you. The stadium was a beautiful stadium, and it really stayed new-like until the renovations. It always looked like a new stadium to me and to a lot of people that traveled in. Most players, coaches enjoyed coming in and playing in Kansas City. You know, for the fans, for the ballpark, because the fans, by and large, have always been, you know, relatively open, fair. And then, I'm not sure exactly, you know, which, it's been 6, 7, 8 years, whatever. They decided to make some changes, and I think the changes they made were unbelievable. It's a beautiful ballpark, and once again, it's brand new, But for years and years, the only thing you did when you came to the ballpark was watch a ball game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have the areas out behind, you know, the outfield where kids could participate, be part of different types of challenges, games, what have you. I think they've got a merry-go-round out there, a little K where kids can go and hit. So, you know, there wasn't all that, but, again, in staying with the times, you know, keeping kids occupied and making it more kid, more fan-friendly, I think they did an absolute, you know, incredible job. When they first designed it, and they called a lot of the alumni in just to show us what changes were going to be made, and I couldn't believe you could widen concourses in an already established building and create all this, and I was just amazed at what they're able to do, and it's I think it's a beautiful stadium right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it was opened back in 1973, and then later that year, there was a guy named George Brett that made his major league debut. What was the talk about Brett? Because he struggled. George struggled when he first came up to the big leagues, first 40 at-bats, just 5 hits. Was there, I mean, you and other guys talking about, and it could have been George Brett or anybody that would be called up to the big league team, was there this feeling like this guy is going to be special, or were there some surprise that he developed into the player that he did?
You know, I don't think anybody thought he was going to be special to as far as what he turned out to be. And a lot of what George turned out to be was, you know, longevity. I mean, he played a lot of years in the big leagues. And but one thing you notice that no one worked harder than George. In fact, George probably worked harder than anybody. You know, in spring training, he spent more time in the cages, more time getting swings, developed as a defensive third baseman. And I think he's a very underrated defensive third baseman. I know he saved me a lot in plays that he made, but he just, no one was more determined to be the ball player that he became than George Brett. And, you know, he just stayed with it through injury, you know, whatever life or baseball threw at him, he worked through it. And he just, you know, he's a very hard-nosed player. Had fun, obviously. You know, George is always a fun guy. But I think the thing that people, you know, we sensed it back there was how badly he wanted to win. And I remember when I retired, I moved back to San Diego where I grew up. And when I came back in, oh, gosh, I want to say 82, 83, somewhere in that era, I was listening to a talk show. And George was going through a stretch of, you know, not playing real well. And I've never done it before, but I called a talk show. And, you know, having been a former player, they, you know, recognized who I was. And so, you know, they decided this is kind of a cool thing to have him on. And I just ripped into him saying, you know what, you guys have been kind of bashing George Brett. If I've got this team and it's Christmas Day and I need a pinch hit, I'm going to ask George to get it. I said, that's who he is. You know, no one's worked harder or better for this organization than George Brett. I said, so, you know, you guys need to, you know, check yourselves. And he was just the guy. He was the guy you wanted up in the clutch. You know, he learned a lot from the John Mayberries and from the Hal McRae's as well. And, you know, I think Charlie Lyon gets a lot of credit for him. His, you know, becoming a hitter he was, and I think George would have been that hitter, but Charlie helped him get there a little bit quicker. And one of the things that I always admired about George Brett is that if he went up the bat and was going to get 6 or 7 pitches, he pretty much knew where 4 or 5 of them were going to be and what they're going to be. He really did his homework.
Al Fitzmaurice, our guest today, played for the Royals from 69 to 76. Big league career ended there in 1978. So let's go back. You mentioned 76, the disappointment there against the Yankees. That was, you didn't have all the social media and all these other different media outlets as we do today. And so I'm thinking just a few years ago, of course, when the Royals made the World Series, there was just a euphoria in Kansas City. It's a baseball town. I try to tell people for years when the Chiefs are so bad and younger people, I'd say, this is a baseball town. No, it's a Chiefs town. I'm like, no, it's a baseball town. You just wait. It's always been. It just needs to have a good product on the field. And we've seen that the last couple of years. But what was the excitement level back in the mid-70s when you guys did crack through and get to the playoffs in 76? Was there a euphoria in the city, or were people still learning to love you guys?
You know, the thing is, I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, I don't think we had the
let's call it mass hysteria they have today because of the fact that it was hard to, you know, you didn't get the word out as easily as you do today. You know, you had a couple of channels, you know, covering it. You didn't have cable. Just a lot of different things were going on back then. But I think the people became fans relatively early because they became disenchanted with the A's or the Athletics that were here, and they wanted to open their arms up for a new organization that were going to that was going to be here forever. And so I think that they started sensing that. And we, different than these players today, we actually lived in the Kansas City area, and we stayed here during the winter, and we were here the next year, and stayed here the next winter, and here the next year. So, you know, when we were part of this franchise, you know, we actually lived here, lived in the community. Our children went to school here. We went to churches here. And so, you know, we knew a lot of people, and that was kind of the way we communicated as opposed to, you know, social media. You know, we were kind of out in the community. And to this day, there's, I don't know how many, 45, 50 of us alumni that still live in the area, still do some things, you with and for the Royals. And, you know, we're getting 30-plus thousand people a game, you know, in 76. We had I think 2.1, 2.3 million, something like that. I'm not sure the exact numbers. It might not be that high. But, you know, we had very, very good, enthusiastic crowds. But, you know, this, again, with everything that's available to the fans, you know, I don't know that it was quite this hysteria. And in the winter of 76, I was drafted by Toronto and then later on traded to Cleveland. So I didn't stick around to experience, you know, what might have followed the entire winter or, you know, that next year. And then, again, they had a pretty good run up through 85. And, you know, I wasn't a part of any of that. And so, you know, I don't know what actually took place, you know, in the city. I know 85 was pretty exciting.
Absolutely.
But I wasn't here for the first World Series, and so I didn't really get to experience that. But I thought that, for me, 2014 to 2015 were two of the most exciting years my ever having been associated with the Royals, even as a player. You know, these guys were just, they're just pretty special, and the way they play the game is pretty special.
You mentioned that you went to Cleveland and then into the Angels. Did you ever end up facing Brett and your former team, the Royals, at any of those other stops?
Yeah, I faced Royals. You know, to be honest with you, I don't have any clear recollection. I remember I did well against them. I think they were just kind of, you know, for me facing them as a Cleveland Indian back in the 70s wasn't where anybody really wanted to be, and you felt exiled there, having been a part of an organization that. It grew into a championship team, and then, you know, continued on after you'd left. You know, it was kind of a bitter, you know, I wasn't real happy about it. And, you know, I never felt comfortable in Cleveland, which is why even with a three-year contract, I was only there a year and a half and wound up in California. But I faced the Royals here. I think it was in a relief stint. I don't know that I ever started against them. I just don't recall, but I do remember coming in a relief and having to pitch against Collins. And, you know, if I went back, I'm sure I'd find that, you know, I pitched a few times against them. But, you know, it just, to me, you know, it wasn't what I chose to remember, you know, regarding my career.
What was the league minimum, or did they have a league minimum salary when you played? And then, you know, what was that? And then what was the best contract that you had in Major League Baseball? Because I think it'd be interesting for our listeners to compare that era to what people are making now.
My first full year in the big leagues, the minimum was $10,000.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was 8-5 that year. And then the next year, the only increase I got was the minimum increase, and the minimum went to $12,000. And again, I had a winning year, and then maybe got another $2,000 raise. This went on for quite some time. I think in 76, I was maybe making $65,000 with the Royals. And the last 3 years, 74, 5, and 6, you know, I averaged like 15 wins a year. And so I went to, again, when I wound up with Cleveland in 1977, I was averaging about 110, 115,000 a year for the next 3 years, and that was the that was my last contract. So, you know, that would, I think, equate out to probably about 12 to 15 million in this day and age.
Wow, isn't that something? I'm looking up your stats here. 1975 jumps out to me. You were 16 and 12. You threw 242 innings that year. And 78 strikeouts, 76 walks. And the reason I bring that up is that I read, and you can, unless they have it inaccurate, that you had a complete game, I don't know if it's a complete game shutout, but a complete game where you didn't have any walks or strikeouts in that game. That's pretty weird.
Yeah, it is. I had, you know, in the minor leagues, I was a strikeout pitcher. And, you know, I averaged over a strikeout an inning and got to the big leagues and, you know, my first year in the minor leagues at AAA, I had some decent strikeout numbers. But in the big leagues, we had such a good defensive team, and I was like a sinker ball pitcher. And of course, the caliber of hitters are so good, and I just kept the ball on the ground for the most part. And yeah, there were games I didn't strike anybody out, I didn't walk anybody. I had complete games where I'd give up 12 hits and win a ball game. I had a lot of, you know, games where the hit totals were low, but that was just the way I pitched. I kept hitters off balance. Jack McKeon, who managed me 1 year, disallowed me to throw a breaking ball when I was pitching against Baltimore, and all I could throw was a fastball changeup because I was getting in trouble with my breaking ball, and so I threw a shutout against him just using a fastball and changeup and just spotting the ball really well. Probably didn't strike many out, probably didn't walk many. And it was a great lesson for me in that, you know, you don't have to add three or four or five pitches to be successful. Just keep hitters off balance. And, you know, even today you see some of the pitchers, some of their best pitches are their changeups. Again, you know, they're throwing, 95, 96 miles an hour. Most of your successful starters are probably 92 to 93.
Mm-hmm.
But the changeup is the equalizer. It gets you out on your front foot, and it's difficult to hit.
How hard did you throw your fastball?
I have no, to be honest with you, I have no idea. I want to say 88, 89 maybe. Probably mm-hmm. stayed right around there. Again, you know, you still have pitchers very successful throwing 89 to 91, 92 miles an hour. 95-mile-an-hour fastball with no movement and bad location, you see what happens to them. They go out of the ballpark.
Let's talk about the current Royals, and certainly your area expertise is pitching, and we're talking Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals pitcher from 69 to 76, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Danny Duffy and Yordano Ventura. I like you to kind of compare those two a little bit, because Duffy has figured it out, obviously. Hopefully he can keep that going. It's just not one of those great stretches, and then he regresses back to the way he was. And I don't think he will as long as he stays healthy, but he's figured out that I don't have to strike out everybody out to be successful. I let my defense play behind me, which the other day he didn't have his best stuff. He still got into the seventh inning. His defense was fantastic, and he gives up just one run. He's pitching like an ace and maybe the best pitcher in baseball now. And we know Ventura has electric stuff as well, but yet it just has not translated for Ventura. We had Ryan Lefevre on the Voice of the Royals a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, Danny now knows how to get outs. He says, where Yordano, it's still, there's times where he doesn't want to just strike you out. He wants to embarrass you. So I'll just kind of lay it out there for you, what you've seen from Duffy and Ventura, and do you think that that same light bulb will go off for Ventura for the Royals?
You know, I don't know that it will go off for Ventura. He's basically the same pitcher he was the first day he stepped on the field.
Yeah.
I don't see any, he's been decent. I mean, he's not been bad at all. He has a winning record. The thing with Ventura, and I know Danny, but I don't know Ventura. I've spent time with Danny. I haven't with Ventura. And I really don't know what makes him tick. If in fact, and you know, Ryan's, you know, travels with the ball club, and if he's had those conversations with Ventura, and he knows that for a fact, that doesn't make much sense for a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
The object is winning ball games. The object isn't embarrassing people. And if that's his goal, it's a very selfish goal. The thing with Danny is that Danny's a pitcher, and Ventura hasn't figured out yet to be that pitcher as opposed to a thrower. You watch Danny, and Danny's capable of throwing as hard as Ventura, but chooses not to because he loses focus, loses control. And every once in a while, Danny will rush one up there 97, 98 miles an hour, but he doesn't try and do it consistently. And if you watch the catcher set up, watch where he puts his glove, and then you watch where the ball actually winds up, you see Duffy is more consistent as far as throwing to Salvi or Butera's glove, whereas Ventura just kind of throws it and kind of hopes it gets in that general vicinity. But again, he's got, you know, a great fastball. He's got movement on the fastball. He's got a great breaking ball. And when he does get in those spots, he's really not hittable. But so often, you know, he leaves the ball out over the plate. And you see the, well, kind of the snap pitches, the recoils and things of this nature. And, you know, you wonder, you know, if one of them is going to be his last pitch, because he just tries to overthrow so many pitches. If he ever settles down, he is going to be the ace that I think everybody thinks he could be, and hopefully that'll be sooner than later.
One of the biggest problems the Royals have had this year, although recently their starting staff has been terrific and a big reason why they're on an 8-game winning streak, but Ian Kennedy, Chris Young, when he was in the rotation, Dylan Gee gives up a lot, and that is the home run ball.
Right.
Is that all about, because we hear, well, the Royals signed Ian Kennedy. He's a fly ball pitcher. We got good defense behind him, and I'm like, well, defense isn't going to help you when they hit the ball over the fence.
Right.
And Kennedy has figured that out recently, kept the ball in the ballpark. But when you watch pitchers, maybe not just the Royals pitchers, but pitchers in general, why are they so susceptible to giving up the long ball? Is it that because they're living in the upper part of the zone, or what do you see when they have those problems?
You know, I see just balls, you know, mistake pitches left out over the plate. You know, again, and I think that coming out of the pen as of late, you know, Chris Young's done a great job. And last year he did a great job starting. Then he runs into this dead arm or whatever, this period where he's just loses effectiveness, but came back and threw the ball pretty well. But when you throw the ball 88 and you work around the belt, you know, that's not a necessary ingredients for successful outings, because you know, it's a very hittable ball. And like I mentioned, when Salvi or Drew Butera set up targets, it's never over the middle of the plate. It's always on the inside or the outside of the corner. But you watch their gloves moving towards the middle of the plate, and 95 straight fastball, you know, isn't special. And you know, you're going to get away with it from time to time, but they're going to catch up with you too. And the thing is, again, it's you know, lack of being able to spot your pitches. We took a lot of pride in, you know, and keeping the walks down, keeping the home runs down. You know, I know, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but I went 120 innings without giving up a home run at one span in my career.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't have to be. You know, you can keep the ball down.
Al Fitzmaurice, our guest here today on the Sports Ticket. A couple more questions before we let you go, Al.
Okay.
The Royals, I mean, really, when you consider all the injuries they've had at some key positions, the starting pitching was really, really bad for an extended period of time. Duffy has certainly saved the Royals' bacon, and then the rest of it's come around recently. The bullpen has had some issues, of course, injuries, and then Soria's had struggles, although he's been very good recently. The offense has sputtered quite a bit this year. And despite all of those issues, Al, you look at the standings today after winning 8 in a row. The Royals are 64-60. They're in contention for the wild card. They still have a lot of games against teams that they are competing for the wild card with, and they still have 6 games with the Indians, who they trail in the division. Are you, I don't know if surprise is the right word or adjective to use here, but are you a little bit, I guess, surprised, because since I can't come up with another word, that with all of those things being said and the Royals have gone through, that they're in it right now on August 23rd?
You know, I was surprised they weren't for so much of the season. I thought the pitching staff, with the addition of Kennedy, you know, had a chance of being, you know, solid with some of the pitches we had last year, getting one more year of experience. But, you know, it didn't prove out to be. I'm going to put a lot of the ownership of this season on the starting pitching, because they just didn't do the job early in the season. And the thing is, had they done even some of these pitchers pitching like at a 500 rate, you know, we'd be, you know, right up there with the Indians at this point. But until last 2-3 weeks, the starting pitching hasn't been what it was supposed to have been. And you know, as a former player, I know that when our team came to bat and they were down 2, 3, 4 runs and had to play catch up the rest of the game because the other team's offense isn't going to stop all of a sudden, it's very difficult to play uphill baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And but again, knowing the Gordons, the Salvies, the Hosmers, people like that, Canes, there's a lot of pride that goes into what they do. And I know, you know, they're going to stay as positive as they possibly can. But you know, the first 3 months of the season, I know, is eating at them because even in 2013, they wound up with a winning season. 2014, of course, winning the World Series and losing the last game of the year, and then last year winning it all. They were going to do whatever they could to not make that happen. But what does happen is all of a sudden you've got like a Gordon trying to hit, you know, a 5-run home run and doing things he's not capable of doing, Hosmer the same thing, instead of just kind of, you know, going back into your game that you're familiar with and playing that and everybody doing the, you know, getting on the same page. And I think what we had was a good team that wasn't playing good baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's bad teams that can play good baseball, but I don't think that was us. I think we were a good team that just, you know, weren't clicking, and for whatever reason, this club is either hot at the same time or they're not at the same time. And you very seldom see one guy just on fire and the rest of the team, you know, sputtering. Usually it's kind of all or nothing. And even was the last couple of years, but they were able to sustain it for so long. And hopefully, you know, what we're doing right now, we're able to sustain, because if so, you know, we're contending for a wild card, but with the 6 games against Cleveland, and someone else is going to beat Cleveland somewhere along the line, they're not going to finish the season undefeated. You know, who knows what that will bring, you know, in the last week or so of September. You know, we could be right up there.
Don't you think there are, I don't know, probably fans of other teams, I don't know about other organizations themselves, are sitting here going, wow, don't let the Royals in. Because if the Royals get a new lease on life and they sneak into the playoffs, even as a wild card, man, what a dangerous team they would be.
Well, you know, for the last 2 years, and it's kind of, oh gosh, I don't know if you can actually put a finger on it, but late in the game, it was like, oh my gosh, they're still in the game and it's the 7th inning, we're probably done.
Yeah,
they're going to figure out a way to score a run, you know, and then here comes, you know, the three-headed monster. Game over. And this year, it's a little bit different. You know, they've got some different components. They've got a guy in Strom that I think right now is pitching better than anybody out of the bullpen. It's just he's maybe got 6-7 games under his belt. Again, Soria's been kind of an iffy pitcher all year. Can still get the job done from time to time. Herrera is solid. And again, I think that for the most part, they're looking at Wade Davis maybe coming back next year, but they're getting back in this. So they're going to probably revisit that and see if he's, you know, physically capable. They're not going to, if he's not, they won't run him out there by any stretch of imagination. But this club is, I've never known a club that was more dependent on their relationships with one another than this particular ball club, with the Royals. And you've got a big part of their heart and soul in Mike Moustakas that's been out, but you've got Chester Cuthbert who's filled in more than admirably, more than I think anybody expected. But, again, having Moose there every day is different. A sputtering, you know, Alex Gordon, you know, is something that the Royals haven't really seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of the season he was, but I don't think it's any surprise that as he's kind of gotten back into the swing of things, and who knows what, you know, what he's felt, that the Royals are also playing better baseball because, again, he's the 10-year Royal, and he's kind of one of their go-to guys. And then, of course, Hosmer and Salvi being the other guys. So, you know, I'm really not surprised that they're able to do this. I don't think they panic ever. I think think they feel that they can get back in here. And, yeah, I think a lot of other clubs look at, like, well, here they go again. They're going to make that August-September run and get back in the thick of things. And, you know, I personally believe that as well.
Time for a final question, off-the-wall question for you, Al, okay. although it's not really too off-the-wall because I just thought of something else I wanted to ask you. And that is, what is your most memorable moment as a Major League Baseball player? And it could be something that was just funny and crazy that happened, or it could be something specifically that you did. What is something, like, when I ask you that question, what's the first thing that pops in your head?
It's probably the first Major League win I got. It was out in Oakland. And, you know, just the night before, my roommate, Jerry Clam, was going to start the game. And I was in the bullpen. And I've never been a relief pitcher. I'd always started in the minor leagues. And he kept asking me questions, you know, how do I pitch Bando? I said, I have no idea. I've never seen him before. How do I pitch Reggie Jackson? I have no idea. What about Rick Monday? What about, blah, blah, blah. And I go, Jerry, I said, I've never faced these guys before. I have no idea. I said, go with the way you've always pitched. And, I mean, he kept me up forever. And he got rocked a little bit the next day, and I wound up coming in relief, and I pitched, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 innings, whatever, and wound up getting the win. And I couldn't wait to call my mom and dad. And so for me, you know, that was kind of my my most inspired or most memorable moment on the field. And off the field, it was actually meeting my wife of 45 years now. So
yeah, and I met her a few weeks ago. Yeah,
that was very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it was that first win, I don't remember all the specifics. I remember, I think the first batter I faced, might have been Campy Campaneris, and I struck him out. That wasn't a sign of things to come, as far as Fitzmaurice being a strikeout pitcher.
Right.
But it was a pretty special day for me.
Okay, I lied. I'm going to give you one more off the wall.
All right.
Truly off the wall question. All right.
Okay.
Ryan Lochte in the news for fabricating or embellishing a story. Did you or any of your teammates ever fabricate or embellish a story to cover your rears?
I don't remember ever doing anything, significantly wrong.
significantly. I like how you threw that in there. That was good.
We would back in the day, we used to have curfews.
Mm-hmm.
And, we'd stay out, maybe past a curfew, and the manager the next day might ask, what time we get in. We'd say, we're in by 11, 12 o'clock or something like that. I mean, we weren't out tearing up the town or destroying property or things like that. But, I get into the politics of what's going on today. And to me, it wasn't the smartest thing they ever did. But in light of everything else that's going on right now that's in the news,
yes.
It seems pretty trivial to me.
Blown out of proportion to an extent.
I think so. They're not kids. They're 32. But, right. We've got adults that are lying day in and day out that we don't really, spend that much time on. But, I think he made a mistake. I'm not going to condone it. I think it was stupid. I think he's getting kind of what he might deserve. He's lost his contracts, although I think he cashed most of the checks already.
Yeah.
But, it was just kind of stupid. And the truth oftentimes, saves you, the most embarrassment. Tell the truth, it's kind of over.
Exactly.
And, he and his buddies made a mistake, and of course he was kind of the headliner, and he's paying the price. But too often, and it's a shame, is people of celebrity status think that they're above rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not. It's just what they do. And I never took for granted what I did for a living as a young person. And I always was very grateful, for the opportunities to do it. And I never thought that I could just get away with doing anything because I play a sport. And I don't think people should. It's just what I did better than... I could not build a house. I could not go in front of a bunch of people and defend, somebody. Mm-hmm. So that's just what I did for a living, and I was able to do it well, and I was able to do it, you know, for a considerable amount of time. And, you know, after that was over, then I went to work. So
yeah, absolutely. Well,
so be it.
You enjoyed the big league dream and lived the big league dream there for almost a decade. Al, we certainly appreciate the time. We enjoyed the conversation with you today, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
All right, sounds great. Wait, maybe we can do it in the playoffs.
That would be terrific. That sounds like a date.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do that.
Thanks, Al. Take care of yourself.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's Al Fitzmaurice, former Kansas City Royals pitcher from 1969 to 1976, and finished up his career with the Indians and the Angels. He's also done some TV and radio work there in Kansas City. Al Fitzmaurice, hope you enjoyed that conversation with him, looking back when he played back in the day when the Royals were an expansion team, and then, of course, opened up Royal Stadium in 1973. He was there for that, part of the first Royals playoff team in 1976, and still lives in Kansas City and still goes to a lot of Royals games, and so he's connected with the Royals even back from 69 all the way to present. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Al Fitzmaurice, former Royals pitcher, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs.